Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Why get all your holiday decorations delivered through Instacart? Because maybe you only bought two wreaths, but you have 12 windows. Or maybe your toddler got very eager with the advent calendar. Or maybe the inflatable snowman didn't make it through the snowstorm. Or maybe the twinkle lights aren't twinkling. Whatever the reason, this season, Instacart's here for hosts and their whole holiday haul. Get decorations from the Home Depot, CVS, and more through Instacart and enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
Whether you're a duck or whether you're a beaver, your fantasy team needs a new receiver. It's Danny and Dusty at lunchtime every day. Maybe you're a tortured fan of Rip City. Danny and Dusty are here to take pity, hoping there's not a center with bad knees on the way. Talking noon till three, Danny and Dusty on the fan. Yep, I'm singing again, cause they haven't said I can't. Danny and Dusty love the teams the rest of us revile. Raising a Blazers banner would make it all worthwhile. Noon till three,
an Odyssey station.
Number two, Danny and Dusty with you on this glorious Rassin' Wednesday afternoon.
Wow, we replaced Robot Dusty with Real Dusty yet again.
All right, we'll see how long this lasts. I've been IT Dusty here, trying to figure things out. Beep, and as our engineer Joey can attest to, I am pretty useless in that regard. So I'm just trying my hardest here. I'm just trying my hardest, doing what I can. Let's start hour number two with a little NBA. The Portland Trail Blazers, they're off again tonight. They'll be back in action tomorrow.
Indeed.
Nice little layoff for the Blazers after, I don't know, seemingly playing every other day to start the season.
God, or whatever deity you hold dearly. Because if I needed a break, they sure as hell needed a break.
Yeah. And it's three. Well, yeah, right after a win. They do need a break. They need to jump off this cycle here, huh? Don't be feeling too good for too long there, fellas. At 3-5 in the season, we have seen ups and downs, right? The two best teams that they have played to this point have beat the brakes off of them. But I think we've seen a lot of flashes from young guys, especially guys that we've wanted to see develop and grow into contributors. It's almost been in fast forward because guys like Ryan Rupert giving more than serviceable minutes, Delano Banton dropping a 20-piece off the bench in the fourth, to the ones that'll be upset about it, to win a game against a very shorthanded Pelicans. And then Tumani Kamara in his steady growth from what we saw as a guy that inserted himself into the starting lineup late last year, has played really damn well to start. But who are the Blazers? What is their identity? That has been the looming question, not just to start the season through the first eight games, but the entirety of the post-Damian Lillard era here in Portland.
Yeah,
are we starting to find that out?
Yeah, and the thing is, the interesting thing is I started, I do a game notes write up on my Patreon after every game. I stacked two of them together following the Oklahoma City and Phoenix game. And it's not a, here's what happened. It's a, here are the things that I'm kind of writing down during the game, or these are thoughts that I'm having as I'm watching the video back. And as I started watching it back, and I'm taking those third quarters out of it, I'm just talking like holistically, like what's interesting, what's going on right now? What are the trends that I'm noticing? And the big thing is, and this is the drum I've been beating for 7-8 years, the Blazers need to get bigger, stronger, longer, more physical, more athletic. They have done that over the last couple of years. They are now quite literally the biggest team in the NBA. They're the biggest and longest team that exists. They are, depending on which metric you use, whether you use NBA.com or your second spectrum, they are either first or second in points allowed in the paint per 100 possessions. They don't allow them. Now, the pushback to that is, well, they've played a really crappy Pelicans team that doesn't really put a lot of rim pressure. The Warriors shoot a lot of threes, yada, yada, yada. Okay? But if you want to have my counter to that is, like, yes, you're right. They are not a team that has faced a ton of shots in the paint. I believe they were in the bottom third in total shots faced in the paint. Part of that is that teams are having trouble getting in there. Like, there's an actual deterrence. In the Victor Wembanyama parlance, it's called a hell nah. And that's because there's so many arms, so many legs, there's so much length, there's so much physicality in the paint that it's difficult to get there consistently. The other part of this is, according to Second Spectrum, this is going to get super nerdy for a second. What Second Spectrum does is it takes all of the video that exists and it's fed into machine learning algorithms. And it's told over, I think the video goes back to 2011, if I remember right. And so every single pick and roll, not even one that like results in a shot or a turnover or even a pass, just every single one that happens, every single event that happens gets fed into this. And the longer it goes out, the more data it has, the more information, the more succinctly it can process the stuff, right? And what it's been able to do, like if you're watching an ESPN game and they go to the film and they pause it and they kind of move it with their hands and the camera angle changes and you see a little circle pop up underneath them that says, this shot has like a 42% chance of going in. That's using the Second Spectrum app. That's what that's pulling that from. That's a direct feed. And what that tells you is based on the shot location, the shooter, then the defender present, the likelihood of what an average shooter basically would do at that point. So when you see like Steph Curry has a expected shot quality of 42%, but for him, it's like 50%. What ends up happening is you have this thing called QSI, which is this a number that says the difference was. Either you under or overperform expectations. I say all of that to say, even though the Blazers aren't allowing as many shots in the paint, which I think is an indicator in of itself, but they're also 10th in the NBA in the expected difference in field goal percentage. So basically what that says is even in the opportunities they're getting there, it's not like teams are converting at a higher rate. So all of the indicators in the early season are that teams are not getting there, and when they do get there, they're performing below average. So that's on the defensive side of the ball.
I think that in large part that has to do with the length that you talked about, right? Mm-hmm. They are a longer team, but it's not just having 1 7-foot true rim protector in DeAndre Ayton. Now, when he heads to the bench, albeit for 12 to, I don't know, what's Klingon's high, 16?
Yeah.
16, 12 to 16 minutes, you're getting a legitimate second rim protector on the floor for Portland.
And right now, again, according to Second Spectrum, the top three bigs in the NBA in field goal percentage allowed when defended as the closest defender in the NBA, Victor Wembanyama is number one at 37.14%.
Whoa.
Yikes. Number two, Donovan Klingon, 41.38. Number three, Chet Holmgren, 41.86. So your eyes are not deceiving you when it comes to Donovan Klingon. He is a massive, massive human being who is very, very, very good at bottling up and gobbling up everything in the paint. The problem is between Vic and Chet and Donovan is that Vic and Chet can go out. They can move away from him not only effectively but very well. Donovan obviously is a guy who's more paint bound and he's a little bit more limited when you ask him to get away from the paint. But, you know, it's neither here nor there. It's more Rudy Gobert than anything else, right?
Yeah.
Which, again, is it a problem if you have a player that's profiling like the defensive player of the year that is, or a four-time defensive player of the year? My answer is no. I'd rather have that guy than not.
I'll tell you what, though, is you sit there and he gets more comfortable in his skin as an NBA player and starts to develop his skills. I'm really excited to see how he fits on the defensive end of the floor in starter minutes, right? Like, I don't think his athletic profile ever will tell you that he's going to be a guy who can defend on the perimeter.
No.
Because he is every bit a traditional big man. Like, he is, he's not, like, I don't want to say he's, like, lead-footed, because he's not.
He's just massive.
He's just a big human being. What are Wemby and Chet? They look like guards that have been stretched out like Stretch Armstrong, right? And they move in that regard too. So I'll be really interested to see kind of that one foot in the paint, which he's really good at. He's really good.
2.9-ing, yes. He's really good at
avoiding those technical fouls.
Because he lives in there. And that's the thing is, he doesn't want to leave the paint. He wants to be there. And that's what you saw against Oklahoma City. I had another media member was like, I just want to see Klingon out there. I'm like, you don't want to see him out there against
this team.
And then Chauncey put him out there and in a five out. And you could tell he was like, I don't want to leave. I don't want to leave. And then he did. And, you know, it was just awkward for him. It's just,
all right.
It's very limited.
Defensive identity. We are finding a rim protection.
Yeah.
I looking at offensively, though?
It's the same thing. They are getting downhill and they are getting to the rim endlessly. They are right now, they are in total rim points and opportunities and points per 100 possessions. They are trying to get there all night, every night. The difference is they are the worst rim finishing team in the league. And that in big part has to do with Anfernee, Scoot, Tu, Chris, Jeremy, and Denny.
Yeah.
Those are your guys that are drastically underperforming. Jeremy right now is one of the worst in the NBA. Scoot is just behind Ant. I mean, I think they're exactly equal now. Tu is just trailing them, and Chris is behind them. What you're looking at is a team that is trying to get downhill, trying to collapse the defense, and doing an effective job of doing it, and generating a lot of paint points, but they're not doing it as efficiently as they should be. I very, 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 very simply believe that Denny will figure it out. I think Ant will start figuring out. Scoot, I'm a little hesitant on and how where he's going to be when this is all said and done. Tu, I definitely think he'll start figuring that out. Chris, we'll see where that goes. Jeremy being that low is kind of shocking. I didn't feel that he was missing that many shots in the paint, but apparently he is. My point being, they are underperforming so poorly in the paint as far as an effective field goal percentage or an efficiency rate, that there's nowhere to go but up.
Look, all of these things tell me they're good at defending in the rim. They're good at getting downhill, but they're not efficient when they get there. They're not going to be on a clip to win 32 games for much longer.
No, I mean,
because that does not win you games in the NBA.
No,
even if that is your identity and you're saying, hey, we start finishing at a higher level, right? The game is still outside in. Offensively, so having a good rim protector is huge because you either get a dunk or take a three, but three is greater than two. Portland can't shoot on the offensive end. All they can do is get downhill and still not finishing at a good enough clip to take out even good teams in the NBA.
Yeah, I think that there's a little bit of zigging when everybody else is zagging. The hope is that the offensive firepower comes around in the sense of getting a little bit more balanced on the three-point line, but having something like being a rim pressure team like this, if they find a way to get to just around league average, that is something that they can rely on. And when shots aren't falling on any given night, the math is, you know, 3-over-2 is always going to be there, but these droughts that they're having in these third quarters and just to start some of these games, if they can get out of their own way and just get again to a league average rate of finishing, from there they can finally start to kind of put things together, right? Like a consistent line of this is who they are, because the shooting's always going to struggle, particularly from three. I expect Ant and Jeremy to continue to kind of carry that load, and when Shaedon Sharpe returns here relatively soon, hopefully he can be another guy who can contribute in that same vein. But if they can just clean up the efficiency around the rim, it gives them a stabilizing force that allows them to be in every game. Does that make sense?
It sure does. All right. Identity. Good to see.
Yeah, something is forming, right?
Good to see, huh? It's not just a rudderless ship wandering the oceans. All right, well, we'll see how the identity continues to develop for this Portland Trailblazers team as the season goes on. Let's go to the NFL next, where not the most reassuring news if you're a Cleveland Browns fan. Danny Dusty on the Fan.
The holidays are all about sharing with family. meals, couches, stories, grandma's secret pecan pie recipe. And now you can also share a cart with Instacart's family carts. Everyone can add what they want to one group cart from wherever they are. So you don't have to go from room to room to find out who wants cranberry sauce or who should get mini marshmallows for the yams or collecting votes for sugar cookies versus shortbread. Just share a cart and then share the meals and the moments. Download the Instacart app and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Plus enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Things are going very well for the Cleveland Browns this season.
Oh, no way.
Yeah, we hear F around and find out a lot. Well, they're finding out. They're finding out a lot.
Are they finding out 250 million ways?
Hey-o! Deshaun Watson is done for the year with an Achilles injury there. General manager, he took to the podium today to address what has been going on. And Andrew Berry, he's not the fantasy football guy. Andrew Berry is the GM for the Browns. He was asked about the trade for Deshaun Watson and how the team is going to handle this moving forward.
I'm really not in reflection mode. I think that's probably, I remember I got asked us about Dobbs last year. It's really more not really my focus at this point in the year. Our focus is really on finishing out the 2024 season, having the team play at a higher level, and then kind of we'll get to like those maybe longer term or big picture reflections at a later point in time.
Yikes. That does not sound like an endorsement from a general manager who is happy with the fact that he's going to be saddled with Deshaun Watson for several years moving forward.
Yeah, I mean, we all kind of expected this. Remember, Diana Rossini had the report of the dissension among the ranks, as it were, in Cleveland. And
I think we know what side Andrew Berry's on.
I mean, this had to be it a contract this big in the guarantees and the way it was done.
$230 million.
The manipulative nature of it and backloading it and escaping the suspension year, everything that was there is going to come back and haunt them in the most treacherous way possible, and it's all because of their ownership. And boy, do you love to see it. And not necessarily for the rest of the players in that team, not for the rest of the players in that team, not for the front office, not for the fan base, but for that ownership and putting that contract together and luring that guy from Houston to Cleveland under the false pretenses or under the auspices of manipulating the punishment he was going to be given for being handed a legal case where it was, 27 different women accused him of sexual assault? Like, I mean, well, what the hell did you think was going to happen here, man? You think this was going to be a happy ending?
Danny. as it sits right now, I think what I heard from Andrew Berry was a general manager who is done with Deshaun Watson, but does not know how to get out of it.
I mean, because there is no easy way.
There is no way. None.
The only thing you're hoping for is that the NFL decides somehow, some way to meet with the NFLPA and allow in the next 2 years some sort of amnesty clause.
That would bother me if Cleveland gets the golden parachute out of this. Because they knew what they were getting in business with in Deshaun Watson. And they went ahead and gave him 5 years, $230 million. And if they get the golden parachute out of it and don't have to pay the final 2 years of that thing, which is, oh, by the way, $73 million against the cap each of the next 2 years. Okay. Now, if they get a golden parachute out of that, I would be bothered by that. I think there's a lot of teams that I do feel bad for. You get into a situation with a guy and he gets injured. I think the amnesty clause, especially in the NFL, if you get one every 4 years, right, and it just kind of cycles through, or hell, you line it up with rookie deals, right? 5 years. You get one every 5 years where you can get out of it and just be like, all right, yeah, we screwed up on this one. It's our bad. We want take-backsies on it. I think that should be part of the collective bargaining agreement in the NFL, because you want to watch teams turn over quicker and how much more fun it would be. That would be great.
Man, the guys are still getting paid too, so the players union would be all for it. But the thing is that as much as the rest of the league would probably like to stick it to Haslam and the Browns here, they would vote for it because of what it would mean for them.
Absolutely.
Because let's say Tua, you know, the Dolphins ultimately just go, we want out of this.
Yeah,
we want to wash our hands of this. Not because he's not a player, but because of the safety and the concerns and everything else that comes with it. Now, a medical retirement is entirely different. You know, the league covers those kind of things. There's insurance policies, and then they don't impact the salary cap, as it were. But I think you're going to have teams around the league that would like, God, wouldn't it be nice? Like, let's say Daniel Jones's deal went a year longer. You don't think the Giants would be like, let's get the hell out from underneath this immediately?
We want out right now.
Or
it would help a bunch of teams.
If the amnesty existed last year, would the Broncos just go, screw it, and use that Walmart money to eject Russell Wilson into the sun? You know, and I think that's it. You wouldn't have had to. What would they end up eating? $36 million worth of dead cap in Denver?
I think it's more than that.
I think it was wasn't it 70? Actually, yeah, because it was 2 years
over
worth.
2 years.
So here, that's if you could amnesty it and just be like, all right, guys paid, doesn't hurt our salary cap. We're gonna go ahead and now you all of a sudden now you're back in the market. Now
your rebuild is so much quicker.
Yeah, and if you're the players union, you also want that because your guy gets paid, and that also makes teams more viable on the pay scale because that frees up more money, which means more guys can get paid.
If you're wondering how Deshaun Watson's contract would work and how it would look, if he gets released prior to June 1st of next offseason, the Browns would carry a $172,770,000 cap hit, which would cost them
Good
$99 million against the cap. If they trade him pre-June 1st, it would be a dead cap hit of $80.77 million, and they would lose about $7 million against they would lose $7 million over of what they would be paying him. And then post June 1 release, there would be a 2025 dead cap hit of $118,935,000, 2026 dead cap hit of $53.835 million, and it would cost them $46 million more against the cap next year. If they trade him post June 1st, which I don't know a team in this green earth that would trade for Deshaun Watson right now, they would have a 2025 dead cap hit of 26.9, 2026 dead cap hit of 53.8. And then they would actually end up saving $46 million next year if they would find a team to trade for Deshaun Watson.
Is this the most untradeable player ever? It has to be, right? He has to be.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, this is a whale of a contract.
Like, Antonio Brown was moved multiple times despite being the most insane individual we'd ever seen.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, this is, yes, because there's always that sliding scale of production to what you're willing to put up with. He doesn't produce, and his contract is bloated, and why would you want to put up with what will probably be more lawsuits coming down the pipeline that you're going to have to deal with? Yeah, no, it is. He is right now. The question is this the worst trade of all time? Because remember, the Browns, they traded for Deshaun Watson. Think about that. They traded for him and then gave him this contract. I mean, does this go... where do you put this with the Jeff George trade, the Atlanta Falcons Jeff George trade? The Falcons sent Indy a first, a third, a future first, and a future third for Jeff George. The conditional third, or the conditional first round pick, was Marvin Harrison Jr. That's what Indy got out of that deal.
Good God.
And Jeff George went 7-9 and 9-7. So do you put it above that one? Or as far as worst ever? Oof. Do you put this with the Broncos Russell Wilson trade? Where, remember, the number that you're saying right now about Deshaun Watson, you got 2 years that the Broncos are paying for with Russ.
Yeah.
They also gave up a 2022 first, second, a 2022 fifth, a 2023 first, and a 2023 second. Plus, Noah Fant, Shelby Harris, and Drew Locke.
God.
I still don't think it touches the Russell or the Herschel Walker trade, though.
No, that's the worst.
But is this worse than the Russell Wilson trade?
Who do they end up taking with those picks? You got Witherspoon. Who else did they get with that? Was that Cross?
I can never remember which pick was.
So
whose.
they got Cross, Boye Mafe, Witherspoon, and then in 23 they got Derek Hall with the second round pick, which didn't really work out for him. But I mean, getting a starting high end corner and a starting plus tackle with those picks on top of all of the salary cap relief and Boye Mafe.
And they filled immediate needs, like with Witherspoon and JSN in the same draft.
Yeah, and Noah Fant. And then that's
Hall and Charbonnet in the same draft. Like, they could be more aggressive. I think that's the valuable piece of it. Is like, it may not be the pick that they made with Denver's pick, but they were able to pick up two and take a flyer on one, right? And if you look at it, Witherspoon, JSN for a first round, pretty good. You take a flyer, and then Zach Charbonnet is, I mean, he's not like a world beater, but you've been playable. So, man, I don't know. I think that Deshaun Watson.
It's up there as if not the worst, one of the worst transactions in the history of the sport. That's crazy.
But Deshaun Watson may be worse just because of what Cleveland gave him after as well.
Yeah, the what was tagged on.
Yeah, yeah. I think that may make it worse. And by the way, here's what the Texans received: multiple players and draft picks in exchange for Deshaun Watson in the trade. All right, this is what Google. They got starting left guard Keon Green, Will Anderson, Tank Dell, Kalen Bullock, Kamari Lassiter, Damian Pierce, John Mechie, Christian Harris, Jamal Hill, Cade Stover. Dang. Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, I think that's pretty good.
Yeah, that's halfway decent.
Yeah. They used a first-round pick on Kenyon Green. They used a third-round pick on Tank Dell. And then the 2024 fourth-round pick they used on Cade Stover, their tight end. That's a good haul, man.
Yeah, that's pretty damn good.
Pretty dang good.
Pretty good if you find it. All right, coming up next, speaking of pretty good if you can find it, what if I told you companies should probably live up to the unlimited or all you can eat or any of the other things they advertise? Otherwise, people get very, very, very mad about it. But we'll get to that here on The Worst Day on the Web. But first, here's the Big Kahuna with Sports Update.
It's time for today's Worst Day on the Web with Danny and Dusty on Odyssey and 1080 The Fan.
Well, that sucks.
Have any of you guys ever had one of those experiences where it's like all you can eat or all you can do this or unlimited this, and then ultimately had some version of like some kind of pushback? Anybody?
I mean, I'm a little bit of a fat man, but yeah.
Have you ever like gone to an all-you-can-eat place and they're like, no, 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 you can't have that? Or
I've never had that.
Never hit that point. No.
Okay,
I actually have been at an all-you-can-eat buffet where we've gotten the warning because our entire team on road trips,
the O-line showed up.
Hometown buffet on a road trip. No, the entire team would go and we'd have like a meal. On like when you're bussing to a place and you games on Saturday, you leave on Thursday. Thursday night, you go to the hometown buffet.
Yeah, and you guys wipe the place out.
Yeah, and there was like, hey, these big guys, they gotta watch what they're eating.
Yeah, they see you.
And it's like, how about that family of 12 sitting over there that is housing more food than our offensive line?
Well, yeah, but your offensive line is 4 dudes instead of 12. Yeah. But yeah, they're like, I don't know, we don't, yeah, these 80 guys rolling off the bus, thank you.
I don't know.
We're closed.
You should have seen these 12 for us. This is a big family.
Theo Doyles.
The O'Doyles or what was it? The Nutty Professor?
Oh, the Clumps.
There we go. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Very close.
Yes.
Hercules. Hercules.
Hercules. Hercules.
What a great bit.
It's a great dumb movie.
Great movie.
No, it's a great dumb movie.
No, not a great movie. Terrible movie, but a good bit.
I bet it does not hold up at all.
Oh, no, we couldn't make that today.
I think we could.
Yeah, I mean, there's certain parts probably
we should.
It's like the, what was it, in the beginning of Tropic Thunder with Jack Black's character and his previous characters.
Oh, yeah.
Jack Black or Robert Downey Jr.?
Well, yeah. I'm a dude playing a dude disguised as another dude.
The movie that absolutely, unequivocally could not be made today, and I put this up there with, like, even with, like, Blazing Saddles.
Which is number one.
No, it's not. The movie Blank Check. The Disney movie.
Is that the one with
Blank
the kid?
Check.
The little tiny baby from Family Ties?
Yes. It is the kid who gets backed into, while riding his bike in a bank parking lot, gets a blank check, rips off the bank for $1 million, buys a house, and then the entire rest of the movie is how he is trying to lure and get an older woman in her like mid to late 20s to go on a date with him, and then she does.
Yeesh.
And he's like begging for a kiss. It's a movie that cannot be made these days.
Yeah, no. Wow.
Also a movie featuring Tone Loke.
Was that Mary Kay Letourneau?
Right? Like it was
People tried to say that Big could not be made anymore these days because of Elizabeth Perkins and making out with Tom Hanks in that movie. But because he was technically a child but didn't look like
him. Right. This is a legit kid trying to get the older gal and she goes on the date with him.
Yeah, I'm just saying I never got that argument from Big. That's
yeah.
The funny part about this entire segment is we've gotten this far and I haven't even mentioned what the worst day on the web is yet. That's how you know this is a good one.
Yeah.
It has nothing to do with food, in fact. But I just wanted to throw it out there as one of the many kind of promotions companies run. This one's pretty unhinged in the sense of, like, how far are you willing to take advantage of something? A Hertz customer took a car on a contract that had, in the fine print, unlimited miles.
Okay.
He put 25,000 miles on the car in a month.
I mean, it was unlimited miles.
I'm with you. But he took it back to Hertz, and a Hertz employee, and this is all recorded, so I would imagine this is mildly staged in the sense of, like, how far can I take advantage of this, and how disruptive can I be with it?
You mean, like, mildly, like when Jackass rented a car in Portland, I think?
Yes.
I think that was in Portland,
yes.
And then they entered it in a demolition derby because they bought the insurance?
Mm-hmm. And then brought it back on the flatbed?
Yeah.
Didn't McGahee bring it back?
I don't know.
But yeah, no, that was here. God, a good demolition. Don't you guys do demolition derbies out on your neck of the woods?
No, they do combines.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah,
I knew there was something.
They have a combine demolition derby.
Oh, yes, there we go, yeah.
So bigger than just cars.
See, but it's like in Seinfeld where he goes to pick up his reserved rental car that he reserved. And she's like, I'm sorry, we're all out of cars. And he's like, isn't that the point of a reservation?
I don't think you get it.
She goes, oh, I understand the point of a reservation. And he goes, I don't think you do.
Otherwise, I would have a car.
Still, that might be the best Seinfeld skit of singular skits.
So on point.
Mm-hmm.
Because so on point.
You could see that happening 100%.
Yeah.
This customer was hit with a $10,000 add-on bill.
Oh,
whoa.
F right off. No.
No. Yeah.
All he has to do is go take a yellow highlighter to that contract that he signed with unlimited miles and be like, look, bitches.
Mm-hmm. No, it's exactly what he did, and they got pretty mad, but it went full circle to Hertz corporate, and they are now apologizing, and the customer they've been issued a public apology. They will not have to pay for the miles that were incurred.
They should eat it, because they're a giant national corporation that can eat that charge that they left open in their contract.
The one they got hit with a couple months ago, I don't know if you guys saw this, in the rental contract, you know, you can rent hybrids and EVs, electrical vehicles now.
Okay.
And in the contract, if you return your electrical vehicle, there were surcharges for gas.
What?
Yeah.
No.
So they were sliding because, you know, that was one way they would get you in the past, is that if you return the car without a full tank, blah, blah, blah. Well, they were like, oh, we're just going to add a surcharge for gas because you're using an EV. And it's like,
because even though gas right now is $1.89 a gallon, we're going to charge you $7.99 a gallon.
Yes.
Yeah.
So the rental car game, still a scam.
So wait a minute. Is this guy, are we still going to court on this? Or
no, they ended up dropping everything. But this is, I could say, I just wanted to highlight this one as Hertz having another bad day, because they fail to stand up behind what there's like. Look, anytime you do one of these promotions, you have to understand that there's going to be some jackhole somewhere that's going to be like, watch this drive. You know, that's 100% what's going to happen.
Yeah. What we are learning here is where Hertz started going wrong was when OJ became the pitch man.
Do you think they're still falling back on that one?
Well, it was good at the time, but you know what? You do business.
To be fair, he was not yet a murderer.
Karma's going to get you, though.
Yeah.
Karma.
Instant karma's going to get you.
I like it.
Like the Beatles said.
Mm.
I don't think this is instant. I think this is...
it took a while, but yes. But even then, he wasn't yet a murderer as far as we know.
He wasn't. You are correct on that. Yep.
Like I said, as far as we know.
Ice toner gloves and Hertz rental cars. There you go.
Bingo.
It would have been funny if he drove away in a Hertz rental car instead of his own white Bronco.
That's the other thing we talked about was how was that?
That wasn't his. That was another USC greats white Bronco.
Oh, that's right.
Al Cowling.
Yes.
Al Cowling. Yes.
Yes.
But how is it you decide to go with the Miami Dolphins quarterback to sell your gloves?
It's because he's from Pittsburgh.
Miami Dolphins.
Miami Dolphins.
The Vancouver Ford text line pointing out, how did he get so many miles in a month? Yeah. I feel like to get 25,000 miles in a month, they had to have put it on the rollers.
Well, because you're
on the dyno?
Yeah, you had to have put it on the dyno, right?
Now, I think he drove... Where was this at?
25,000 a month. You're looking at close to 900 miles a day.
That's
back and forth across the country.
That's hefty.
I mean, a few times.
I mean, driving across the country is like what? Isn't it 5,000 miles? Like, well, is east to west on average?
Look, I'll put it in the how I know it. From here to Boise is 440 miles, and that's an 8-hour trip. On an interstate.
You've got a drive from L.A. to New York City is 2,788 miles.
Yeah, 2,800 miles is what they got. So, there, as I said, the back and forth, it's about 5,000 miles.
Yeah. I just don't know. How do you put,
yeah.
I mean,
you're
doing
miles.
Nothing but driving for an entire month, all day, every day, to put 25,000 miles
that's
on
what I'm
a
saying.
Car.
Like, they had to have had like a dyno, or they were taking shifts or something. Right, like there's just no way you can do that. The math just doesn't math.
Yeah,
that's driving from L.A. to New York City 4.5 times.
What's really funny is my Google has our general location here plugged in, and it has our address, and then it just says East Coast of the United States, and it parks us on the map. I think it went to just south of DC. So apparently there's a specific spot on the East Coast that we are using for like the generalized East Coast of the United States.
Oh, perfect. Wait, did he get the oil changed on this vehicle?
Multiple times?
Yeah, think about that. Yeah.
Was he a responsible driver?
Did he get
doing
eight
a lube
oil
job
changes?
every 3 to 5,000 miles?
I mean, he's between like 5 and 8, oil changes on this thing.
Look,
did he maintain it?
He's running synthetics, so we'll give him 5.
All right. Well, okay. Yeah. So, all right. Yeah, if he did, I think Hertz has got to suck it up.
So
that's right.
I'm incredibly interested by what Google Maps did for me here when I typed in East Coast of the United States. It literally parked us in just outside the city of Mineral, Virginia. Yeah, Virginia.
Mineral, Virginia?
Mineral, Virginia, off I-64 down the street from the Louisa County Library. But it's okay. Just like this random spot. How does the Googles decide that this is the East Coast of the United States? Like,
what about Virginia?
That spot. But it's super interesting. I typed in East Coast of the United States, and this is kind of where the dart landed.
That's not even on the coast.
It's not even on the coast. No. It's like I'm guessing 100 miles, 120 miles from the coast.
Interesting. Huh.
Yeah, I just I was
somebody
like,
at Google is probably from Mineral, Virginia, and is like, "Yep, good enough."
I mean,
I'm gonna put this Easter egg in there.
I could get to the coast from here, so it's clearly close enough. I mean, yeah, there is a body of water, Lake Anna.
Okay,
which doesn't appear to doesn't connect to the ocean.
Okay,
so I'm sure this is so interesting to so many people, but yeah, it made me go, "Huh, what the hell's going on here?" But yeah, there you go, Hertz stepping in it yet again. Good times?
Great times.
Great times.
OJ.
All right, come in.
Just hurtling airport benches.
That's right, Jeff.
Coming up next, the Mountain West is trying to add yet another team to the conference as they keep spinning the wheel. Could we see another team maybe make the move up to the big boy table? Danny and Dusty, Tanny the Fan.
Look, bitches.
Well, Dusty, this is something we've talked about as the expansion of college football continues to go, and the musical chairs keeps playing until we get to the Super Conference. We all know where this is going. But Brett Murphy this morning was reported Northern Illinois' interest in the Mountain West as a football-only member is waning. So now the Mountain West is considering FCS power North Dakota State.
Oh, boy.
And we're already seeing one of those schools that we kind of thought might make that move up in Sac State.
Yep.
They very clearly are a team that is angling to move up. They are dumping money in. They are building a new stadium. Donors are showing up. You're seeing all of the wheels start spinning of where they're going to ultimately kind of end up being. We've kicked around the idea of the North Dakota States, the Montanas, the Montana States, the perennial top teams in the FBS, or excuse me, in the FCS, and whether or not they want to consider giving up their seat at the big boy table in the next division down. Because there are certainly trade-offs that come with this. Because if you are the big fish in the small pond, you know what you're going to be year in, year out. No matter what kind of happens, they've gone through coaching changeovers. They've gone through the expansion of the transfer portal. And yet, they're still there. They very clearly have an identity of who they are, what they can do, and what they mean to their communities. Making this next step is not something that they can take lightly, even at just moving to a place in a relatively bigger pond in the Mountain West.
Farm your own land, man. Mm-hmm. And I think that it would... They have the infrastructure to pull a Boise State, right? To make those jumps up. And to be really good. Hell, they beat Big 12 teams. They beat FBS teams as an FCS right now. But it comes with a big roll of the dice of can you be the next student? We've seen a lot of these teams that have made the jump actually have almost immediate success, whether it's Appalachian State, James Madison, Liberty. There have been a lot of teams that have gone from the FCS level to stable, sturdy FBS programs, but at the same time, they're nowhere near the level of success. They're nowhere near competing for championships. Hell, we saw an undefeated team last year in Liberty go and play Oregon in the Fiesta Bowl and got beat 45-7, for goodness sakes, right? And after the opening drive of the game, they didn't stand a chance in that. If you want to win national titles, if you have a passionate fan base that expects national titles and is more than happy doing it, I don't understand the why you make the jump. The millions of dollars, sure, but when you're going to a Sun Belt or you're going to a Mountain West in this case, is the money going to be that much more? Is it truly going to be that much more? Because it makes almost more sense for a school like Sac State to do it than it does North Dakota State
because
or Montana.
They're not at that table yet. So
they're not
bypass
championships.
That. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. You bypass that and you go, all right, like because there's going to be a step back.
And there's more of a sense of pride in a school like Idaho, which made the jump up and then moved back down. Now they've moved back down. They're playing more competitively. Their fan base is invigorated for a chance to win something. And at North Dakota State, when your fan base is trained to win titles, to win national titles, and then you take that step back, that's a big gamble, man. That is a big gamble if they were to do that, because the path to a title is very difficult, if not impossible, for any of these G5 schools. I mean, just look at Boise State as the prime example of it. How close have they been, but how far away have they been as well? Going to a New Year's Six Bowl, beating Oklahoma in the Fiesta Bowl, that was great. They've never played for a national title. They've never gotten a seat at the table to get a chance to play at a national title. Mm-hmm. It's really damn hard to do.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting spot to be in. It would be a cool story. Nobody cares about me personally in this, but I have a lot of friends who went down to, and I have a very close friends that went to school there and that would be excited about it. So for me personally, I think it'd be a cool little story, but I think it's probably better for North Dakota State to just stay where they're at.
Yeah. Farm your own land, man. Be great where you are. The big time's where you're at, right?
And that, not only that, I don't know if they have the donor base to really do it.
No.
To do it right.
Not to do it at a championship level. They don't.
And that's the thing. Is like, win your championships where you're at.
Yeah.
When where you're at, it's one thing for an SMU to do this when they don't have the graduation rates of basically every other school, because you have more money than God.
Yeah.
That's when you've got 500 oil magnates that are just telling the ACC, nah, we're fine. We don't need the money. We're good guys. Because I believe their enrollment is 13,000. It's super small.
Yeah.
But it doesn't matter. That's the thing. It's because of the money that they have from their donors, from their alumni, they can work with that. And, the Ohio States and the Michigans of the world, they have insane amounts of money, but not necessarily because that they have, the Stanford donor base or the MIT, Ivy League donor bases that exist out there. It's because their volume is so, so high. You get $10 from every Michigan State donor or Michigan donor, every Ohio State donor, you've got more money than God, because it's the two largest alumni groups in college sports. Yep. And North Dakota State doesn't have the capacity to really drive beyond that.
No. I mean, I think the quick Google search will tell me Gary Tharaldson is the richest North Dakota State alum.
Which I'm going to go with trucking.
He started in 1982 by buying a Super 8 motel, and it's just Tharaldson Companies. I don't know what he does, but he's worth $1.2
billion. I tell you a lot of those hotels up there in the North Dakota, South Dakota, and upper northwest Minnesota, they are all known for, they have wicked water features in their pools and whatnot in those hotels.
Oh, yeah, how about that?
Because they don't have water anywhere else because it's too cold.
Yeah, and because they want to try to suck you into their hotel, during the, 6 months of frozen season.
Tharaldson is in the Scandinavian American Hall of Fame.
Not surprising.
He owns a bunch of He owns hospitality. A bunch of hotels.
Yeah. So he
sold 130 hotels for $1.2 billion cash in 2006.
Are we sure his last name isn't Tharaldson? Don't you know?
Don't you know?
Don't you know? Oh, which is funny.
Oh, gonna squeeze right back by, past you here.
Yeah, the University of North Dakota, the building that the hockey team plays in is the Ralph Engelstad.
Oh, right.
So if you want to, know what the kind
like
of
Rose.
Names,
it's like Rose and the Golden Girls. How she, you know, growing up in St. Olaf, Minnesota. Yeah,
not too far away. Yeah. All right, coming up in hour number three is an interesting line that's coming up in the NFL right now. One, it's the return of the running game, but just how consistent and how effective you can rely on that running game is kind of setting the table for the best in the NFL. We'll get to that and more. Aaron, Danny, Dusty, Tenny, the Fan.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.